Hello and welcome to another Giant Splash podcast. I'm Henry Schulman, the Giants beat reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. My guest today is team president and CEO Larry Baer. He speaks to the Chronicle for the first time since he returned from his suspension for a videotaped altercation with his wife Pam in a San Francisco park. Larry talks about his suspension, how he feels he used the time away to become a better person and CEO, and what he heard from the community. We also delve into many baseball issues. Potential changes to Oracle Park, Farhan Zaidi's first year running baseball operations, the search for a new manager, and much more. We'll get to that right after this. Welcome back to the Giant Splash. I'm Henry Schulman, the Giants beat reporter for the Chronicle, and I'm here with Larry Baer, the president and chief executive officer of the Giants. And we have a lot of ground to cover. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff related to the team, the ballpark, the job Farhan Zaidi is doing, Bruce Bochy's final games, all sorts of stuff like that. But this is the first time we've had a chance to talk to you since you returned from your suspension on July 2nd. And I just wanted to know, first of all, it's been close to 3 months now. Have things returned to normal, whatever normal is, within the front office in terms of your day-to-day work and the things that you're doing?
Yeah, Henry, I think they have in large part, and that's really, I think, just great credit to my colleagues at the Giants have been extraordinary. The Giants board has been extraordinary, and it's been a process that, quite frankly, I think it's been a resetting process that has been it was important. Obviously, huge mistakes were made, and wish the incident never happened, but it did. And I think we're all stronger for it. Most importantly, our family is doing really well, Pam and the children. And, I would say that we're stronger than ever. And that's obviously the most important thing. That's the highest priority. In terms of the Giants, things are going really well. I don't feel like we missed much of a beat at all, and we're powering through. We'd love to be surging into the World Series, and that may not happen this year, but I think we've taken important steps this year.
You made it clear when you came back that you were going to be visible as you were before. Maybe other people in the organization, some of the executive vice presidents who sort of took over your day-to-day roles, would be a little more visible as well. But you have seemed to taken a bit of a lower profile. We did see you out on the field when you announced that Will Clark's number was going to be retired. I'm just wondering, first of all, was there any, I think it was the first time you were on the field for something like that. Was there any apprehension or nerves at all about how you might be received?
I have to say, when we first came back into the ballpark, Pam and I and the family, I didn't feel it because I've been out in the community and people have been wonderful. So I didn't feel like there would be anything walking to the ballpark. You never know. It's been an amazing, supportive family inside the ballpark. In terms of taking a lower profile, that was intentional. I felt that the most important thing coming back July 2nd was to reengage with the employees, reengage with all my colleagues, listen, get up to speed, and also honor the work they've done. And there's been a lot of work that they did while I was away, and they continue to do. People that the vice presidents, et cetera, many of whom I worked very closely with. I have worked closely with for 20 years plus. I think of 7 or 8 of my direct reports, it's been 20 plus years that we've worked together. So kind of feel like we've established a good rhythm, and that rhythm has returned in a really good way.
And you know very well that there was a lot of speculation that when you returned, you would not return with the same authority. I think people like to euphemize it by saying that you'll have your knees cut out from under you. You'll be back, but you won't be, you won't have the power that you did. And now Rob Dean, an ownership, does have an office at 24 Willie Mays Plaza, which I believe is a new thing. What has been the dynamic, between you and Rob? And has anything changed in terms of your day-to-day running of the Giants?
I have to say, not much really has changed. You know, I'm president and CEO, and I'm one of five board members. What I think maybe a lot of people didn't know is that Rob, as sort of the head of the board, chair, if you will, was always involved. Before this, before March of this year, was always involved as our other board members. And I think Rob did an extraordinary job as interim CEO. And as such, he's, you know, continued, had exposure to things. We continue to talk. That happened before. It's happening now. There's a lot to do going forward as we redo the team and as Mission Rock comes online and all the exciting things in the future, all our initiatives. So it's really very little change. But Rob's engagement is fantastic. He's, you know, he's at the ballpark more than he was, but it really hasn't changed the communication. We're all very connected. The board's very connected.
Okay. And, you know, you did undergo some counseling, which I think was mandated by the league. And we did have a sort of background conversation a little while back. And you told me that aside from the counseling, you did a lot of conversations with the community, outreach. If you could just talk about both parts of those, starting with the counseling and what you think you actually got from it, and then the community outreach, why that was important, what exactly that entailed, and what you got from that.
Well, I think, you know, we've been, I'll just speaking for myself, you run hard for, it's been 27 years in this role, and starting out with Peter McGowan and with Bill Newcomb and then myself as CEO, managing partner, et cetera, you run pretty hard. And sometimes you don't really hear things like you should, and you may not have the empathy as you might. I love the community. I love people. I love bringing joy to people. But you also have to really be a good listener. And I think that the time away allowed me to meet with some key community groups and people I respect in the community. And listen, not necessarily in a counseling setting, although there was counseling involved, and that I felt to be very productive. But to listen and to understand, you know, how people are being perceived. I learned how I'm being perceived, the good and the bad. And it was, I found it to be very energizing and enabling and empowering. And a time for self-reflection, which, you know, in life you don't necessarily have a chance to do. And I've been doing something that I've love, and from going to games with my dad on the bus to Candlestick to watch Willie Mays as a youth, it's been sort of more than a job for me. It's more of a passion, a mission, a crusade. And when you get so into something, sometimes you lose a little perspective. And I feel like I've come back as CEO with it gained a lot of perspective. And I think that's good for not just myself personally and my family, but I think that's good for the organization.
Now, we can't go over weeks of conversations that you had, some of which I imagine were private. But, you know, maybe you could pick one or two things that you learned about yourself that for, on the good, and maybe one or two things on the bad.
Well, I think on the good, you know, I find that we have just a, you know, I talk about myself being passionate about the Giants. You know, when I was away, I just see how everybody else is passionate about the Giants. So this isn't necessarily something about me, but this is something that I just want to point out, because it is the energy and the commitment and the love within the Giants front office, within the Giants family. And that goes all the way through to people that work at the ballpark, the ushers and the guest services and the ticket takers and the vendors. In terms of something I learned about myself is that, you know, I believe I'm an empathetic person, but I don't always show it. And I think showing that empathy and making yourself vulnerable in ways that you may not just in the normal course of life, because the day-to-day rat-a-tat-tat just keeps you moving, but kind of taking some deep breaths and taking things in is something that I wasn't doing, and that I've now doing. So that was something sort of on the bad that I've recognized, and something on the good is that, you know, there's a lot of love for the Giants in the community, And sometimes, you know, if you have a season that's a losing season, say like last season was, and you say, oh, gosh, what do people think about the Giants? There's a lot of love. I mean, people are, it's not just wearing the caps and the shirts, but they're making memories. I'll never forget at one of the parades, 2010, Brian Sabin leaned over to me. And you know Brian, he's a very hardcore baseball guy, but underneath it all, very big heart and sweet person. And said, leaned over to me, people in the, you know, million people, whatever, at the stage at City Hall. And he said, you know, this isn't about winning and losing baseball games. This is about making memories, people making memories with their family. And I, and that deep-seated love for the Giants was a good thing I saw when I was able to, you know, walk down the street on a Tuesday afternoon at noon in a way maybe I wouldn't if I was back at the office.
Okay. I do want to just go back to one thing about the actual incident that was taped. With the Me Too movement, there's a lot more sort of visibility about the issue of domestic violence. And I mean, I think different people have interpreted the word violence differently. It was clear from the video that when Pam fell to the ground, it was not something that you did on purpose. It just happened that way. But the question I really have for that is, did you gain an understanding during the process about why this was such a big issue to people in the community and why some people who have seen the video, were probably not as quick to forgive you as maybe others might have?
Well, the answer to the question is yes. I gained an appreciation for interpretation and triggers and people's experiences and honoring that and listening. And as I said, I wanted to make sure that anybody in the Giants, inside the Giants family, that wanted to talk with me about it. We had a get together at the Giants, and I invited people to come talk to me, and a couple people did, who about their own experiences. Not in a way, it was an incredibly supportive, amazing session. And so what I learned is that, you know, people have interpretations, and I hold no ill will, grudges, etc. And I think I've come through this stronger as a person, understanding that and gained understanding of how people might interpret something like this. And most importantly, the family has come through, you know, in a very strong way.
Okay. Did any employees, I guess the word, what might be vent and tell you why it upset them?
That wasn't really what it was about. Some employees talked about their own experiences.
Okay.
And that was, I think, a really awesome interchange where we were able to, you know, have back and forth and a really, you know, sort of good heart to heart.
And you had some private conversations as well, one-on-one conversations, as well as the big staff meeting, I
yes.
believe. Okay. Well, thank you for talking about all of that. We're going to move on now to the future, which a lot of Giants fans are interested in. Just first of all, could I get your general feelings on the season as a whole? We're coming up on the final week here.
Well, I think it's been a season where we've taken some steps. And it's been, you know, Farhan has done an excellent job coming in at a tough time with, you know, this you know, incredible recent history and coming in from the outside and honoring the history, but also being an agent for change. And that's a tricky balancing act and putting his team together. And obviously, there'll be more of his team will be unveiled as we go into the preparing for the 2020 season. So I think that you could call it a year of transition if you want. We didn't come in with low expectations for the season per se. And, you know, we had the stretch of, what was it, 19-4, something like that in July, where Saw that in there was a will to win, once the team more coalesced. So I think their valuable steps have been taken this year, and I feel like as you're building the house, an important foundation of the house, of the architecture of the house, was laid in 2019.
And you had, as Farhan said from the very beginning, as you said from the very beginning, you're going to try and win and play as much meaningful baseball as you can in 2019 with an eye toward the future. You were in a playoff position. You decided to, you as an organization decided to trade two key relievers and Drew Pomeranz, who, ended up becoming a key reliever in Milwaukee. And you got some terrific prospects back. I think everyone knows Jalen Davis. Everyone knows Mauricio Dubon, who's been fantastic. Most people don't even know about some of the other prospects you got in these deals. But the bullpen has been an issue since. The team has had a downturn since. Is there any regret in the front office about making those deals and getting to the point where you are now, probably another losing season?
No regrets. In fact, in that sort of, preamble, we should also say that we decided to keep certain players too, right? So there was a lot of speculation about Madison Bumgarner, speculation about Will Smith, both of whom had, generated considerable interest. So, I think that, Farhan, I have no different feeling now than I did the day after the trade deadline, August 1st, when he was largely lauded outside and inside for the job that he and his staff did, at threading the needle and getting prospects that should play meaningful roles, as you mentioned, but also, being able to keep some key players to take a shot. It was a tricky situation, but we feel like going into 2020, we have some wind at our back now with some additional, depth. And now so there are no regrets at all.
Yeah, we're down to three starts for Madison Bumgarner. Can you say if you've begun any kind of contract discussions with him?
I think Farhan has had ongoing discussions with his representatives throughout the 2019 season. So I characterize him. I don't want to get into, what is or isn't being discussed, but, I know they've kept open lines of communication.
Okay. Whether you sign him or if you can't sign him, there are some other free agents out there. Garrett Cole is one that comes to mind. There are going to be some free agent starters out there who are going to cost a considerable amount of money. That includes Bumgarner, whether it's short term or long term. Farhan's history in Los Angeles when he and Friedman were running the team is to not give out those kind of contracts, particularly to pitchers. In fact, I believe the only two big contracts they've given to pitchers are the extension for Kershaw, which was 3 years at about $95 million, and Kenley Jansen, who re-signed for about $80 million. And I even heard that, that was more of an ownership desire than maybe even a front office desire. So I guess the question is, the expenditures, the outlays that you would have to get for that kind of pitcher, whether it's Bumgarner or Cole or anybody else on the market, do you think that is still possible given whatever financial considerations you have and whatever considerations Farhan might have in his belief on the wisdom of giving out contracts like that?
Well, I think it's more what you're referring to on the latter than the former, meaning that it's not so much, hey, do you have the money for player X or the money for player Y? And, how much does ownership want to spend? It's more, how does Farhan and the staff want to bake the cake, right? And the way you bake the cake, the way he's been successful baking the cake is doing a lot from within, making strategic moves when they make sense, and as you mentioned, Kershaw got re-upped when he was very much a part of that at the Dodgers. So, and those are, that was a top of the market contract. So it's not about being averse to spending money, but how do you really want to put the whole thing together? And when you think about it, the way it was put together 2009 on when we won, it was put together pretty much internally, and we would you know, complement with free agent signings a little bit, mainly signings at the break at the trade deadline. So I see it more as Farhan baking the cake with depth and with you know, looking at current players and what we have in the farm system and acquiring the farm system. But it's going to be up to him. He may come back. I mean, it's no secret we did pursue Bryce Harper with Farhan as the chief baseball executive.
And you are maybe going to pursue some hitters. It's always a possibility. Hitters have not wanted to come to Oracle Park under its various names. I heard of one small adjustment.
It was not more hitter friendly at AT&T Park or
than it
Bell
was
Park.
At SBC. Yeah, the one I did hear about one small change. A season ticket holder who had seats up in the left field corner of the club section said that those are going to be taken out, and some sort of bar is going to be put in, or some sort of kind of gathering spot.
So we're playing around with a lot of ideas. That is not official because we haven't made the decision to do it, but that's being looked at. There's a number of things, obviously, with the bullpen mounds and moving the bullpens, and then there's, so it's all kind of goes together under I think an exciting, you know, sort of 2.0 era for our ballpark, for Oracle Park. And what does that mean? That means that there'll be more as habits change. And one of the things we really feel we need to do is have our finger on the pulse of the consumer, right? And the consumer in 2020 is actually different than the consumer was in 2000, and definitely different than 1993 when we started our ownership group. So we see, Henry, a sort of a, you know, kind of, you retool the ballpark some. We introduced the ballpark pass. That's been very successful, where people can come and go as they want, and you buy a monthly subscription. So that's, in today's world of Amazon and today's world of how people are consuming, the physicality, the ballpark changes to address it as well.
Will we see significant changes in 2020 in regards to where the bullpen mounds are and the dimensions of the ballpark?
I would say on the former, bullpen mounds most likely. Again, this comes down to architecture, and it comes down to design and what we can do, and that we're pleased with and we feel is going to, you know, serve the team and serve the fans. But I would say on the first part, yes. In terms of dimensions, I think that some dimensions may change, but I don't think the view is going to be bring in the fences to make it a hitter-friendly ballpark and do anything in the extreme. I think that there would be, as a result of some of the work we do, there could be some changes in the dimensions as well. But and how it's unclear, you know, how extreme that'll be, or how you know, material that'll be.
But you think that the fans coming to the ballpark for the final six games, if there are fans who just really love the triple, should probably say goodbye to the 421-foot sign?
I don't think they should say goodbye to the triple or the triple's alley.
Yeah,
I don't think because I think the triple is a spectacularly exciting play, and it's been a signature of the ballpark, and I don't think there's any desire in our four walls to get rid of it. And so whatever 421 becomes, if it changes, I think the ballpark, that the major sort of thrust of the ballpark will not change in that respect.
Okay. You mentioned the consumer, as we reported earlier, a couple of weeks ago, for the first time, you lowered season ticket prices. I think most of the folks, except for those who have charter seats and have contracts. Was that a difficult decision?
You know, it was it wasn't a difficult decision to lower season ticket prices. It was a decision that we sort of all just kind of got our heads around and said, our fans we've had this amazing 20-year run with our fans. And we finally hit a speed bump where we're 2 to 3 years of not winning. However you want to calculate it, if you want to calculate it at the starting in the second half of 2016, if you want to calculate just because we did make the playoffs in 16, so if you want to say 17 and 18, and that's not been the Giants' DNA. You know, if we'd had a losing season, we'd bounce back. This year, we may end up, we'd have to, you know, win pretty much all of our games to get over 500. But let's say we don't get over 500 this year. That is something that we all said, hey, look, we kind of feel like we have a contract with our fans. And if we're taking a little bit of a dip, that happens in professional sports. You know, newsflash, you're not going to be in the World Series every year. I mean, in Boston, they actually have a positive, winning record, and you think the team was in, 25 games deep into mired in last place. So it's all a matter of expectations. We know the expectations are high, and if we don't meet them by getting into playoff contention, then we think we should adjust. And I think more than anything, it's an acknowledgement that fans have a lot of choice with their resources, and it's acknowledgement that, hey, we get it, we understand, got the message. We didn't have this year we didn't get it to where we wanted to get, so we're gonna give you a break next year.
And the fans who come next week, and I imagine attendance will be pretty good, especially that last weekend against the Dodgers. They're going to be there to say goodbye to Bruce Bochy. And are we going to see some really kind of special things happening next week? I mean, we've seen some, videos on the big scoreboard that you guys installed with, some various people saying goodbye. But are we going to see some, maybe some old friends coming back, old friends of the Giants coming back to say goodbye to Bochy in person?
I think we could. I think we could have some magical moments. And, and that's, again, it goes back to the statement about the 2010 parade about, creating memories. I mean, I think, frankly, when I walk away from the ballpark on next Sunday or a week from Sunday, the 29th, after the last game against the Dodgers, there's going to be a lot of emotion. I think I'll be kind of a jolted with the feeling of this was an incredible. The Bochy era was just an incredible time. It was last night here at the ballpark, and I happened to get off the bus with Mrs. Yastrzemski, Mike's mom, and then Mike's maternal grandmother. That was a magical moment to see them walk in the ballpark and then see her embrace her son on the field and know what the family memories were like. So I think people will come in this. Our goal is to embrace that, those feelings, and honor the people that want to come and pay homage to Bruce and the era that he was, essentially captain of the ship through three world championships. And we never had one, and we had three in his era. And that people want to, maybe be with family and loved ones, especially that last day, Sunday the 29th, and reminisce.
A lot of people want to see Tim Lincecum there, the recluse. Any chance?
I don't know, Henry. Have you located him?
No, we have not located him. He was spotted in San Diego at a wedding. It was like the Loch Ness Monster.
I read. Was that your reporting? Was that exclusive reporting? Frosted Tips?
No, that was not me.
Okay, somebody reported Frosted Tips. Did you get beat on that scoop?
I think that was social media that reported that. Speaking of the manager,
we shall see.
Speaking of the managerial situation, how is the search gonna work? In the past, I mean, with Bochy and Felipe, there really weren't a lot of people interviewed. I think that even with Dusty going back, I mean, this was not a major process. Does Farhan have some people in mind to bring in for interviews? Do you think it'll be a long process?
I don't know about long. I can't really say long because that's a function. I remember when we hired Farhan and I had to go out and do this a year ago for the GM. Farhan was involved with the Dodgers in the playoffs, and that was the month of October. So, depends. I mean, is there somebody that we're looking at that's involved with a playoff team? Then that could extend it for sure. But the way it'll work is, I mean, pretty clearly, this person is going to be the key interaction for the manager of the team is going to be with the general manager, with the president of baseball ops and the staff. So that's really the first line is Farhan's going to go out and develop a list. He may have a list in his mind, but that's going to probably most likely stay in his mind until the season's over. And then, just like we did with Farhan, he'll go through the vetting process, and then eventually, the board and we'll all look at it and he'll surface a recommendation. But I can't say whether it'll be long or not. I'm very proud of the fact that in 27 years now of this ownership group, going into year 28, we've had three managers in 27 years: mm-hmm. Dusty, Felipe, and Boch, and they've been. One of them had never been the manager before. two of them had experienced. And so I don't think you can, I think it could go either. People say, well, it's going to be somebody who's managed, somebody who hasn't. Questions, I think it could be either. And it's, we have a situation that I do think in terms of long, I think, it's our way that when we land on somebody, we want to stick with them. That's, I think, the stability of this franchise, having, Brian Sabian do what he did for essentially 24 years. And the stability of the franchise is one of our sort of pillars.
Okay. And the last question, just moving forward, as we stated earlier in the podcast, I think the mantra for this year was play meaningful baseball as long as possible and make moves for the future. What do you think the mantra for 2020 will be? Would it be this is a time we need to make the playoffs?
I don't measure it quite that way. I mean, I think every year we want to contend for the playoffs, but I think, I think take yet another step. And I think it should be a large stair step. And I think we took a large stair step this year. And next year it's another large stair step. And I think it's on all fronts. I think it's being a contender for the playoffs, being in contention, but it's also being, with a somewhat changed ballpark, with new leadership on the field, with a really renewed energy. I mean, the way I measure it is, what's the energy around the Giants? And I think the energy this year was a lot better than it could than many people forecast. And I think it'll be much better next year. So, at times two in terms of the energy around the franchise, because we have a lot of other things going on with the franchise that are exciting. And I measure it more as to how do people feel about the team. And I feel like it's good now, and it'll get much better next year.
Well, thank you, Larry. We do appreciate that you took a half an hour to talk to us about all of these issues, and we wish you good fortune the rest of the season.
Thanks a lot, Henry, and look forward to talking more as we go through the offseason.
Thank you for listening. We'll have more Giant Splash podcast as the 2019 season ends and the postseason begins.
Giants Double Play is part of the San Francisco Chronicle Podcast Network. Audrey Cooper is editor-in-chief. If you like this show, please subscribe, tell a friend, or give us a review. You can support Giants Double Play and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. You can find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe. If you want to find me on Twitter, I am at Hank Shulman, or you can email me at hshulman@sfchronicle.com.